You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you.
Aloha, Felicia.
Hello, Marshall. This is Felicia and Marshall.
Yay, how are you?
Good. Kauai Soapbox, coming in after the homegrown Garden Island Bluegrass Show. Kind of hard to pot these people down, because we love them, our big brothers, who feed us beautiful bagels and honey. Bagels and honey, bagels and honey. Now, like, I see my big brothers from that show, and I'm always hungry. Great bagels. Great honey. These guys can do it. So, Marshall, we are going to have a good show today.
No doubt.
Yep, no doubt. And I am expecting a couple of citizens who asked some questions of me that I ran into this weekend at, you know, at the Hokulea coming in.
Right.
So we're going to be looking at, you know, a few questions. One was about, you know, all this threat of nuclear war. It's pretty scary. I know Friday night, honestly, I really hardly slept. And, you know, trying to do my due diligence for this show, I did call the commander of the base, Pacific Missile Range Facility, and the current one, that's Vincent Johnson, Commander Captain Johnson, and then the one before, Bruce Hay. And I was able to talk to them and have really good conversations that I will say honestly made me feel quite a bit better.
Good.
You know, I was going to try and have them call in, and they didn't quite get the clear go-ahead, and Captain Benny Johnson is on a plane going to Texas to do some stuff over there.
But reassuring altogether.
Reassuring conversations. I actually spoke to four people pretty deeply in this topic. I mean, who are pretty deep in understanding the topic. So I want to be able to speak about that. So we're going to talk about that a little bit in the first half of the show. And you know, as we move a little bit into the later part of the show and into the second half of the show, going to be talking a bit about issues relative to climate change. We continue to have huge climate issues, and Earth issues. Our poor little Earth seems to just be shaking as we've had all this big solar activity. And in the second part of the show, Mason Chalk has been a collaborator in the development of that part of the show where we're going to be talking about how to make, you know, good policy differences for Kauai with what has to do with the general plan update.
A positive, proactive discussion on how to have a beneficial effect on the process here.
That's right. Positive, proactive discussion. And I want to also put out a little bit of recordings from these very positive, proactive people on our sister island of Hawaii. As we say, some say, the big island of Hawaii. I'm going to play a few little clips of some speeches that happened with the 30-meter telescope, Board of Land and Natural Resources hearing relative to Mauna Kea, and I chose a few clips that I think are much larger than the mountain, that, you know, while they're speaking about the mountain, it could speak for many, many different issues.
Right.
So that's what we're going to be talking about, and hopefully my friends from Hanalei Pier, they actually live on the other side of the island, but that they will make it in here. So
you met them down there on Sunday when the canoes came in?
Well, I knew them, but that's where
right.
I saw them. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't
great.
Meet them there, but I saw them there, and this issue came up. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Kauai Store, Pono Pies, Kauai Juice Company, and we thank our underwriters, and we thank the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
Mm-hmm. Felicia, how are you today?
I'm I'm good. You know, I think we're all always so busy and there's so many things going on and everybody's struggling running around from event to event to event. And the good thing about that is there's so many good events.
Yeah, right.
So many good events.
And just amazing things to do constantly here. Yeah. But it keeps us busy for sure. You know, running around, it's this amazing, tranquil day. You know, can imagine just laying on the beach all day, but...
And we made the comment about the Hikianalia and the Hokulea coming into Hanalei this past weekend, and so that was definitely a big part of my weekend.
It was so beautiful. Focus. So joyful. Yeah.
Saturday, getting ready to receive them, and Sunday, a really big, beautiful reception of the canoes and the people, and so much cultural exchange and great food, and, you know, a day of really seeing how much love there is. And I know today and yesterday they have been receiving schools. And for people who don't know about our sailing canoe or voyaging canoes, those two canoes, the Hikianalia from Aotearoa or New Zealand and Kauai's own Hokulea that really began and affirmed a renaissance that happened in the 70s, re-empowering Hawaii and the perpetuation of the culture. Well, they did a three-year tour around the earth called Malama Honua, which means love the earth, and calling attention to all these challenges that we have, whether it is environmental degradation or conflict, bummers, all kinds of issues are at play in the world, and certainly good ones. And a good one was Malama Honua, round the world journey. And so the Hokulea and Hikianalia and I think seven other canoes, including our Namahoi from Kauai, all came into Honolulu right there at the Alawai Boat Harbor. And it was a very big day of celebration. I think it was a redirection for a stronger path towards empowerment of the Hawaiian community and the Hawaiian culture, which, you know, the aspects, the most strong aspects of the Hawaiian culture, which is aloha aina, or taking care of the land, that is in fashion pretty much everywhere, right? Pretty much everywhere wants to be taking care of the land. Whether we're doing it or not, that's the big thing. But at least, finally, we are being aware that we need to. And one piece that I was going to start the show off with, though Bruce cannot call in directly, he sends his aloha. That's Bruce Hay, our former commander. He retired last year, and I called him. I'll just start. I'm hoping our other citizens are on their way up, but I'm just going to just go with it. I had gotten a text, a voicemail, and an email about grave concern over nuclear missile in the Pacific being sent by Kim Jong-un. I'm trying to say that right. I got some education on how to say Jong-un. But we have seen some pretty incredible war of words between President Donald Trump at the UN General Assembly. I tried to pick a piece that, to me, was one of the most provocative, which, you know, when you're speaking to all of the UN and you're saying it's just all about nationhood, I can kind of get that. And the whole point of the UN, the United Nations, is for us to work on a post-war world. Obviously, we're having some struggle with success on that. But Donald Trump from the United States and Kim Jong-un from North Korea have basically squared off at each other and, you know, threatening to drop bombs on each other.
You know, sure, rhetorically, but so many times that's just aimed at a domestic audience, you know. Like imagine all of the airtime that's taking up for Trump, that they're not talking about Russia and anything else. I heard a piece today that the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Joseph Dunsford, was testifying to Congress today. And he said that despite the elevated rhetoric, they have seen no change in the military posture in North Korea. So no matter what the politicians are saying in terms of like their clothing, they monitor it very closely.
Right.
The North Koreans are not making any change.
Okay, and consistent with that. Mm-hmm. Is what I got from both these commanders. And Commander Bruce Hay said, yeah, it was totally fine if I say that he said this, and this is him as an individual, not him as a representative of the United States Navy, and he is retired. But it did make me feel quite a bit better because I had lost sleep on Friday night when I was seeing this stuff. I'm going, wow, you know, because Hawaii is not a place that really can do much in any sort of way of sheltering and protecting from, you know, nuclear action. And so what Commander Bruce Hay said is, and he was the leader of Pacific Missile Range Facility on Kauai, and that's their whole kuleana, their whole responsibility is looking at the Pacific Theater there. And there's a giant grid line underneath, and what they do, they play war games and they practice and they see if they can basically neutralize anything that might be coming, whether it's on the surface, under the water, in space, or in the atmosphere. And he said that he was not worried at all for us, and not because he now lives in Alabama, but because he said he knows what they're capable of doing, what the Navy and the military is capable of doing to neutralize anything that might come from North Korea. And there's multiple places where a missile that could be coming towards us could be taken out of the sky. And you know, a nuclear bomb has to, it's not simple to get it going. So you can simply interrupt it, and it's not like it's going to blow up. So he felt very confident that they could not have an effective strike either here. I asked about Guam and some of these other islands. He didn't bring up Kwajalein, but I spoke to another person who was in the marine world and understands all about what's going on there, too. And also Kwajalein has defensive strike capabilities.
What are you saying, Kwajalein?
Kwajalein Atoll.
Oh.
That's in the Mariana Micronesia area. It's down in the South Pacific. And so Guam is very well defended, and that North Korea, their technology is not sophisticated. Mm. It's not something that's hard to be able to understand what they're doing and if they're doing it. They are a very poor country. They don't have a lot of capacity. They do have nuclear weapons. But he did not feel that it would be plausible or really possible that they would have an effective strike, and that in South Korea and other places, there are so many missiles that are non-nuclear weapons pointed at what is the infrastructure of the North Korean regime. And the North Korean regime knows that. You know, like, if they took that kind of action, the reaction would be so swift and so successful. It would be the regime change that they don't want to have happen, right? The North Koreans are protecting their regime and their way of life and viewpoint from there. And so if they launch something at us or Guam or some of these other islands, you know, it would pretty much be the end of what they are. And even if we have a president who is threatening to nuke these people, we don't need to send a nuclear weapon after them. We don't have to kill 26 million or 9 million people. It could be a pretty strategic strike. Certainly there would be casualties and loss. But it does not have to be a complete obliteration of a bunch of innocent people over there. Certainly there would be some. And we didn't, when I was speaking with him, we didn't get that down in detail to that. But that it doesn't mean they throw a nuclear bomb, then we have to throw a nuclear bomb and have them all lose. We can interrupt theirs, and we could send something else more effective and take out their problem. So he felt like it was absolutely not something to worry about. And existing commander, Vinnie Johnson, he was a little bit more formal in his response. But I could say he also is not worried. And then what is probably, you know, what might be anticipated as a response in something like that is just saying, you know, he hopes that, you know, if there is any kind of good that comes out of this, what he seemed to view also as press fear-mongering, you know, this that maybe people would be less resistive to what they test and do. But he says they have been testing and doing this for a long time, and that they, I could tell both men felt that the situation was under control and not to be afraid.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so I thought that was good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, good. If we don't have to, like, concentrate on dwelling in
fear.
Nervous fear, yeah. I mean, that frees us up to put our energies into
constructive things.
Yeah, peaceful.
Peaceful
intentions.
And constructive things.
Yeah.
So on the point of peace, maybe some of the listeners might remember I had Bruce Allen and Cynthia Lazaroff in here on one show. They live here on the island. They are some of our unlikely heroes who are here. They have extraordinary jobs, and they work in what's called, you know, a second tier or 1.5 tier diplomacy, and sometimes in the past first tier diplomacy. You know, working, like for Bruce, he worked with Gorbachev and Gaddafi, you know, on behalf of the American State Department. He's like a subcontractor, but worked for years with that. And when they were in here, he also worked in Chechnya and a number of other areas. So his whole field is trying to create a peaceful situation in a very difficult places, places that are really, really struggling. And in fact, they are leaving tomorrow, and they will be in Moscow for 3 weeks pretty soon, not quite tomorrow, but they're going to go there on one of their several missions where they are working on easing the tension between the countries. And, you know, that is when they were on the show, they were talking about how accidental nuclear war is something that is far more possible with Russia, because we both have highly sophisticated military systems that have a lot of artificial intelligence in it. And so I was given, you know, a whole number of articles that I can go into with the listeners. But, you know, when I asked, oh, do you have an opinion? Yes, they had an opinion, right? So about what's happening, like when I talked to the commanders, what was suggested is, you know, it sells newspapers to create this fear, and I think it's probably something a little bit bigger than just selling newspapers when you see it so pervasive. But what our international diplomatic team, you know, was talking about was, like, there's this newly formed organization called Committee to Investigate Russia, you know, and so, you know, looking at how do we unpack what that is. And its aim is to, quote, help Americans recognize and understand the gravity of Russia's continuing attacks on our democracy.
That's a committee, like a congressional committee or citizens getting together?
No, it is, like, that's what they go through in this person. So it says the committee's advisory board includes one person born in Moscow, the conservative commentator and military historian Max Boot, but he came to the U.S. when he was little. And then most everybody else on this is non-experts, people who have almost real knowledge on it, and they have picked celebrity actors, Rob Reiner and Morgan Freeman, and they have a new nonprofit video, and it's saying, "We are at war," and it's Morgan Freeman speaking it. And I'm not going to play it because it is fear-mongering. I actually was like, wow, Morgan, what's up with that? Because I think Morgan Freeman is a personality that the average American has, you know, kind of grown to trust. But, you know, it is, again, really working hard on all this stuff about the election. And you know, they're putting out all this stuff that, like, it's fact that the election was impacted by Russia. But, you know, like, the entity WikiLeaks that dumped that information keeps saying, no, we did not get this from the Russians, right? So, I mean, that's what we're seeing. Do you have a thought on that?
Well, you know, there's a huge body of information at this point around that investigation. And what I've seen and heard and read, it looks like there's a lot of evidence that the Russians interfered in our election. And at this point, there's evidence that the Trump campaign worked directly with them. I mean, it's for real.
There is some of that in there, but like that, like when, what I'm, I don't want to read this whole article out there, but like there is so many bigger issues, and in every election, pretty much the U.S. tries to get involved in the other country's elections. We do everything we can to, you know, affect those elections. Mm-hmm. And then pretty much every election we have, our enemies and friends alike try and impact it. So it's kind of behavior that happens.
You know what? In this case, the fear is that it's like the biggest, most successful Russian intelligence operation that's ever been done. And it basically has co-opted the administrative branch of our government. That's what it's beginning to look like. And no, that's not done all the time.
Okay. Well, I'm not an expert on that, so I have to look like a little bit deeper on this. I was looking at like the threat of nuclear war on North Korea, and I'm just reading these different articles. Amy Goodman in Democracy Now! Could do a lot better job on it than I can.
Right.
We might have an Akamai caller. We can absolutely take this call. I have a few other pieces that I've been reading and looking at, you know, on different sides of this particular argument. But we have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, hi, Felicia, it's Pueo. I have a few things to say, and in line with, I'm just not an expert, I wish I was, but I feel like with this man, whose name I refuse to say, I call him Trump in the White House.
Okay.
He is clearly not well or balanced and is a real threat to a lot of things, our safety, our freedom.
I'm not going to argue.
Our Constitution. I feel like he's a messenger for us. He's a message for us all, whether we voted for him or not, to take responsibility for where we are. And I know he has triggered a lot of people into movement, a lot of women. He's unified and strengthened a lot of groups who are definitely pro-healing and pro-power for our Constitution and against what he represents in many ways. So I feel like we can just let him dance his little crazy dance out and paint himself into a corner. As far as the Korean thing, I have to say we are, and I'm going to go into metaphysical stuff, so if you guys don't want to hear that, I know there are a lot of people who are groaning right now, because we are powerful beings. We all are, everyone. We don't have to give in to fear. This fear-mongering is what has caused more and more problems over the last, 20 years than ever. It's just sickening, and it just keeps growing and growing and growing. And, you know, red alerts, orange alerts, this virus, that terrorism, this, that. Why don't we just rely on our inner connection to all that is, to Creator, and start realizing our power is to unite and visualize and or affirm and or pray together. We can clearly take a great lesson from all the wise teachers of all history, all the indigenous peoples and the masters who have come and taught us who we truly are, namely one very important one, Jesus, who have shown us that we have the power to change the weather. If we get together, we control the weather. We can. It's not ridiculous or far-fetched. It absolutely is real. And then in the same way, we don't have to buy into fear programs and then on our own project more fear, because when you project fear, guess what you attract to you? The thing that you fear. Do we need to manifest more and more fear until we blow up our beautiful planet or some part of it and then poison the rest of it? we have a great responsibility in this time, in this day and age, to realize who we truly are. We're connected to Godness. I say Godness, Mother, Father, God is God, yes? So why can't we own that and get powerful again? If it means going to some kind of a healer or a channel or a priest or some teacher, some medicine woman or man, and learning who we truly are, and then using those gifts that we have innately within us to change the world from inside. That's where it begins anyway, and that's, I guess, all I have to say.
Well, thank you for sharing that, and, yes. You know...
And thank you. I want to thank you first, Felicia. Thank you for letting me interrupt. What you said so positively about the fear that we can let go of, you know, in terms of what you learned from these experts.
Yeah.
That's powerful, and I'm really grateful to hear you say that, because I know even if some kind of nuclear device goes off, it's not going to do what most people are projecting from their great fear, you know, and talking. I mean, I hear on the radio people talking about their plan, you know, where are they going to go? Well, there's nowhere to go.
There's nowhere to go. I will give up the one good place. I used to be a shelter survey technician, or at least did that training for FEMA when I was an engineering student. And you need deep mass thickness. We simply do not have that on this island.
No.
Maybe the basement of the state building, the dry cave in Hyena, go to the back of that. You're going to have infinite mass thickness in almost every direction, but it's not very big. In Kilauea, where I live, you know,
me too.
You can't really do much when they tell you to stay inside. I mean, it's like, you know, putting a Band-Aid on a gaping wound.
Yeah,
but
what are you going to do? Come out and breathe the fallout?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
But,
stay underground for 20 years and get old in the dark?
Right. So here's the good thing that the commander said is like, yeah, don't worry about that one, right?
No,
don't worry about this one, at least with... North Korea. For people who do, you mentioned something about climate, and I just want to announce that tonight at Ha Cafe in Lihue on Rice Street, it's sort of across from Danny's, it's near Ace Hardware, Ha Cafe, Apollo Kauai and the Women's Caucus between 6 and 7:30, which means it'll probably really run to 8 or 8:30, there is a panel discussion on the general plan update relative to climate change. And so for people to be looking at, you know, how do we help our island become resilient? And, you know, to be looking at resilience. So people could go there tonight, 6 to 7:30, and the panelists are Ann Walton, who worked at NOAA, and she's been on the show a number of times. She has one of the few people I have read the whole general plan, but not nine times. She has done it nine times. Mm-hmm. And then Joanne Yukimura and
Oh
my golly, I'm forgetting who the third panelist is. Well, I'll look it up. But three good panelists for that. So if people would like to go there for that,
well, I wish
that
I could go.
That sounds great. And it's an empowering thing. Let's, as a family of the human species, we're all one. Let us unite and find ways. We all have answers. We all have something to contribute. And unite in the power that we are. There's power in numbers many, many times more than the addition of 1 plus 1 or 1 million plus 2 million. We know this. Let's be strong and powerful again.
So,
let us learn from our wise people.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, thank you. I always appreciate you letting me voice off like that.
Right on. So thank
you. Sister.
Aloha.
Aloha.
More power to you both. Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. So you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox with Marshall, Felicia, and my neighbor Jake is in here again.
Hey, Jake.
Hey, Jake.
How
are
you guys doing?
Okay, so Jake's here. So we're always training people in here, and Jake is somebody who's training. One of the other things that Kauai Community Radio does is we do public service announcements, and this one is apropos for our discussion. It is about the community emergency response training, and Marshall helps with that, and I think this is even Marshall's voice here.
No. I went to great lengths to relieve the listener of hearing me talk about CERT one more time. Yeah.
Okay, well,
this is actually Liam Cooney, the Kauai County CERT Communications Chief.
speaking on this?
Yeah, I brought him in to actually do the recording of the PSA.
Okay.
Thank you, Liam.
So thank you, Liam, and we'll hear a little bit about how our county is trying to have good preparedness.
The Kauai Fire Department is currently providing free training to all island residents that are interested in becoming a Community Emergency Response Team member. The CERT program trains residents to become self-reliant in the event of natural disasters such as tsunamis, hurricanes, and flooding. The next 24-hour CERT training starts on October 4th at St. Catherine's School in Kapa'a. For more information, go to kauai.gov/CERT. Again, kauai.gov/CERT.
Yes, and so we're going to be shifting our focus a little bit to some of what's going on with climate change. I wanted to actually read a little bit of this article that is about, the title of the article, is called The View from the End of the American Empire, and it is written by Murtaza Hussein. And it's speaking about a lot of this posturing and elements, and he quotes the late intellectual Tony Judt, who's reflecting on the world of emerging instability and uncertainty being wrought by the financial crises and wars that had opened the new century. And it says, less than a decade later, his words seem remarkably prescient in anticipating America's imperial twilight and the rise of its new demagogic politics. And in another show, we talked about an Army War College really even titling it, post-primacy America, meaning when we are no longer the superpower that dominates the world. But here's the quote, and I think this will segue well into talking about CERT, really, Puerto Rico, all these disasters that are happening in different places. It says, we feel more comfortable describing and combating the risks we think we understand, terrorists, immigrants, job loss, or crime. But the true sources of insecurity in the decades to come will be with those that most of us cannot define. Dramatic climate change and its social and environmental effects, imperial decline and its attendant small wars, collective political impotence of the face of distant upheavals with disruptive local impact. These are the threats that chauvinist politicians will be best placed to exploit, precisely because they lead so readily to anger and humiliation. So that quote is like 15 years old, and it was pretty on point.
Yeah.
Pretty on point. So you were going to share something, Marshall, about...
I was just thinking, when we talk about the community emergency response team, there are places, I was hearing today in Puerto Rico, that have no power, no water, and a week into it, still have seen no emergency services. FEMA's not there, nobody's there. And they can only say, neighbors are helping neighbors to the best of their ability. So when I think about that as a possible scenario, even possible, that could happen for us. Who are they going to be, if we look at, okay, what if FEMA didn't get to us for a week and emergency services are overwhelmed and we need to care for each other? And the community emergency response team training is exactly for that reason. And you can be involved actively in the team that would activate in a disaster, or you can just use those skills to care for yourself and your family. And that helps a lot, too. Everybody can get a little bit of those skills goes
yes.
a long way.
And I'm going to tease my next-door neighbor who is sitting here in the studio that I drag in here. I am one of those people who's lucky to have somebody who lives right next door to me who has basic skills with machines and woodwork, and you could probably build a whole house, but like I usually call when I'm in a crisis, like I can't close my refrigerator door or I got a new stove or, my pump won't work, whatever it is. I'm lucky because you live right there, and so you come over and help. But have you taken the CERT training?
No, I have not. I wasn't aware of it, but that's something I would definitely be interested in.
There's this one in October 4th. Is that what it just starts?
Yeah, it starts on the 4th,
You maybe ought to do that. There's a handful of people who, when I took it, I'm pretty good at organizing, but I'm, you know, it's a whole brand new skill set for me to you know, learning how to really do the kind of repairs and things like that. I'm good with pushing paper around and information and maybe encouraging a plant to grow.
Well, that's what I think is the great thing about Kauai and the Aloha spirit. You know, back in Iniki, it didn't matter what you could do. People just came out and contributed in any way they could and helped out. So I think that's a great thing about living in Hawaii and Kauai especially.
Well, you're good with resource and recycling and knowing how to reutilize things, and that after something like a hurricane, what you have is a bunch of rubble and a bunch of need for brand new things. So I'm just going to, like, torture you and encourage you to take that class. And other people who have that skill set, you know, really pragmatic set of skills, like what needs to happen, that would include medical training. I'm looking at Marshall for other things.
Sure. They do some first aid, a little bit past basic first aid. And one of the things, speaking of rubble, is light search and rescue. So, you know, if the homes on your block have been severely damaged, you want to be able to know how to go around in an organized way with a team safely and check out those buildings to see if there's anyone inside that needs to be rescued, and then have some of the basic skills to be able to get them out of there. If you need to use cribbing to lift, you know, a heavy beam or a piece of concrete or something like that. Yeah, so that, and, you know, and on to the whole organizational structure. You get 20 people in the field out to help. How do you organize that? So there's all kinds of roles there. There will be somebody who's just sitting taking notes. You know, so
people should.
Yeah. Please don't think that you need to be somebody who's going to be lifting heavy objects.
Right, that's what I'm not good at.
Yeah, or you know,
climbing up on a tall building that's about to fall down to pull somebody out of it.
Yeah,
that's not
or getting first aid, delivering first aid to somebody. That's not
that.
Everybody's thing. Yeah, but there are all kinds of aspects. There are communications to it, and the you know, operations, logistics. Yeah, there's plenty for everyone.
And what's the website if people want to find out more about the information where they can go to take the classes and stuff? But so while he's looking that up.
Yeah. Well, it's kauai.gov/cert.
Okay, cert, C-E-R-T, kauai.gov/cert. If you are back on Facebook, can you please post that on my wall? Otherwise, I'll do it later.
I can do it.
Yeah, we need... young, strong, capable, ready to go, and, you know, slay dragons kind of people, too, you know, that can go up and help with all of that. I know Red Cross, different people are in there, but that is a really good way to be involved with our community.
You know, Felicia, I'm glad you mentioned that, actually, because I am involved in CERT. We talk about that all the time here, but it's just one of the ways that you can get involved in helping your community in times of disaster. The Red Cross is super important, and they do need volunteers. I know they're always looking for new people, and that's great training you get with them, too.
Yeah, and proactive things is can happen, you know, neighborhood by neighborhood, is knowing who has a certain dependency, like when if you have people who are insulin dependent or have vulnerable health issues. I know after Iniki, it was really important to know who needed the help and that somebody was able to get there. But when I look at all these pictures of what happened with Hurricane Maria, and that was the third category 5 hurricane to rip through that area, and you know, when we have all these fires burning and earthquakes happening and very, very serious tragedy. I'm looking at pictures of, you know, horses that they got to some who have died, how they deal with it, you know, places that have slid down the hill. There's only so much emergency equipment in every community, and, you know, people tend to go to other communities to help when they're in trouble. And when they do, it's really good because then they learn really viable information for how to help when they come back. If you've never been through it, then you don't know what to expect. And so people are going to different places, but there's so many places to go to, they're kind of getting a little shorthanded.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Felicia. I was on the phone. Somebody had a question about that. They wanted to know, is it important to take the class, the CERT class that happens in the community where you would be serving? And the answer is no. You can take the class anywhere on the island and still have that training and you know, link up with your local CERT team. So
the answer is no, and it also, it's good to still meet your local team so you know how to be collaborating. And we're seeing a lot, and keep pulling it back to Jake. One of the things that got me talking to him is when I was watching all this stuff, I looked, and my house has actually endured 3 hurricanes. It has managed to stay intact. My little wooden single wall plantation house has endured through 3 hurricanes, but it's got a little bit of termite damage, and I was having Jake help on some of those pieces. And then, so, you know, we looked to see how we could put hurricane clips on it, because we discovered it does not have hurricane clips on it. So, you know, being proactive, even just taking those CERT classes helps you, your family, not to be a liability. But we're seeing, I'm flipping through all these pictures that really shows a tremendous amount of damage in Puerto Rico. And we've seen a number of the islands there in the Caribbean that have been desperately impacted. So that's a big deal. So again, general plan update, little weak on climate change, little weak on, you know, a number of issues. They've done a pretty good job at part of it, you know. Like, I want to really commend all the hard work that they've done, and people can see it at plankauai.com. It is, even though it doesn't sound like it, it is a county website, and it goes and it shows you a lot of stuff, but it might be that we can help them see how to do more stronger climate change elements. And that's today, 6 to 7:30 at Ha Cafe in Lihue.
Yeah, it's a challenging question. You know, it's like, if we really plan for what's projected, we'd almost have to start planning to put in alternative Malka roads. You know, like really, it's projected that some of our main, you know, arteries, transportation arteries, are not going to be usable in our lifetimes. So. Yeah.
And the infrastructure. You know, a lot of these things in Kapaa, you know, are pretty close to the ocean.
The sewage treatment plant?
Yeah. So those things can present a real challenge, too. And
roads themselves.
Yeah, and infrastructure isn't cheap. So to go ahead and do that, it takes some real planning and some thought needs to go into some of those things. It's
and
not
money.
Like something you just come up with on a whim and it happens.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, if we really wanted to take it seriously, we'd probably stop all development, like at least Makai of Kuhia Highway, like on what's the new resort that's going in down there near the Coconut Marketplace.
Oh, I forget the name of it, but yes, yeah. There's a new resort going in right there, right?
Right?
And
does
so
that really make sense? You know,
across from Safeway, kind of, right? A little bit, towards Foodland, across from Foodland. Yeah, I mean, those are all big issues.
Right.
And you know, what we also see in Kekaha, Waimea, Kapa'a, that those used to be wetlands, and you know, there's been a lot of fill, there's been a lot of drainage, and what's really nice in looking at the Kauai Historical Society database is there are pictures showing on a whole it just filled with water, you know, lo'i after lo'i after lo'i. Same with Kekaha and Waimea and Wailua. And we had abundant surface water at one point. And part of it is that we have had some change where we have less rainfall than we did. But it is important to be able to be looking at it. And so I have loaded up. I want to play something from what happened on the Big Island in Hilo. Are you guys all right with that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I watched a whole bunch of this testimony before the Board of Land and Natural Resources that happened last Wednesday, and this is regarding the 30-meter telescope. People fought it. The Borderland and Natural Resources had at one point given them a permit. The people, you know, stood up on the mountain for, you know, about a year, just about, you know, up there in the cold, everything else, and getting arrested, all kinds of very, very arduous activities. I felt like it was almost a Gandhi moment, you know, for what kind of commitment was taken. They were arrested. It basically went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, hey, these guys are right. You did not do what it takes to have a permit. So it went back to a hearing process, and I watched it. It was like 4 months. It was a tremendous amount of effort. It was like, for me, going to school, learning a whole lot about culture and a whole lot about law. And then when the hearing officer, Judge Ricky May Amato, she basically recommended that they go ahead and permit it, and she dropped off, you know, so many of the matter of facts, the findings of facts, that didn't support that vision, that was all this work that these citizens had done. They were dropped from the recommendation. And so there was last Wednesday some testimony from the interveners, really all sides, you know, giving their piece. But Mehana, she starts off with a very personal story, but then she pulls it to the policy. And I think it's interesting for people to hear this, because she's speaking about, what she's speaking about is much larger than just that mountain. Her perspective and what it is as an individual citizen, and particularly somebody who maybe feels displaced, what it's like going against the system or the structure of government. And I want to play this and a little piece from Koho'okahi Kanuha, who does a little bit in Hawaiian, like he's very fluent, so he will speak in both, but it's going to be a very short segment from him. But I think it's a really good setup for what we're talking about in the general plan. Now, one thing that's very different as these interveners are talking to the Board of Land and Natural Resources is the Board of Land and Natural Resources are absolutely the ones who put these people in peril in the first place. Like in the case of the general plan update, none of this is something that the council put together. So it's a whole fresh group. But I think what Mehana is speaking to could be applicable to the federal, the state, the county, anywhere, because our system really honors exploitation, because somewhere we need money. And money comes from exploiting the commons, from exploiting the land, the water, the air. Somewhere how money is made is basically creating something from what might be considered nothing, but that's typically natural resources, and so we don't factor in the cost of what causes it. So I'm going to see if I can play her here.
Aloha no kako. I am here on behalf of myself and my daughter, Talia Kalaula, who sits here next to poor case. O vau mehana ki hoi, o mauna loa ku umauna. O pu honua o honana o ku kahawai. O pu kapuai mea kupuna kula iwi. My name is Mehana Kihoi. Mauna Loa is my mountain. Pu honua o honana are my waters. And pu kapuai mea are my ancestral homelands. I'm here today to ask you to deny the CDUP for the 30-meter telescope. I'm here today to stand for a mountain, the tallest mountain in the world from the seafloor, the mountain where my kupuna can see and hear me the most clear, the mountain where I receive my highest level of spirituality, ku vahipana, ku kulaivi, ku ainaloha, monakia. My position in this case as a cultural and spiritual Native Hawaiian practitioner applies to the number eight criteria. And if this permit is granted, the TMT will threaten the continuance of my traditional and customary rights in the respective area. I will suffer severe cultural, spiritual, psychological, and physical harm that will cause irreparable harm to me as a Native Hawaiian, my cultural identity, and my spirituality as a Native Hawaiian. the existing telescopes on Mauna Kea and the state of Hawaii and the University of Hawaii's poor management of Mauna Kea have caused me to have an injury because of their failure to honor the customary and traditional practices in this area. My imminent injury is connected to the University of Hawaii's application for a conservation district use permit to request approval to construct a 30-meter telescope that will cause further desecration of Mauna Kea because the construction will forever change the uniqueness and spiritual landscape of this sacred place. I am a victim of domestic violence, and I have shared this story here before in this very room. When I was 19 years old, I was violently attacked with my seventh-month-old baby in my arms. Five parts of my face were broken. I lost so much blood, I could have died. The blows and kicks in my face just inches away from my baby. She could have died. I was prescribed many different painkillers and referred to many different types of Western therapy, all which I refused. For years, I carried grief and pain, never having any way of releasing this hurt until I went to the Mauna. My first trip to the summit of Mauna Kea was in 2012, and from then, my life has never been the same. My kupuna welcomed me to her sacred slopes and allowed me to be there to heal. The heaviness that had settled over me for so long was lifting. All of my life, I was raised with the unspoken understanding that you do not go to Mauna Kea for just any reason. Mauna Kea, as I understood throughout my entire life, was kapu. I come from a family of Paniolo from Waimea, cowboys who honor this mountain. So deeply, they refer to her as Mama Nui, or Big Mama. My kupuna drank the water of that mountain. My kupuna breathed the air of that mountain. My mo'oku auhau connects me to that mountain. 2 months after my first trip to the summit in February 2013, I saw a flyer on Facebook saying that an 18-story telescope was to be built on the summit of Mauna Kea. And at that time, I didn't know much, but I knew that an 18-story structure of any kind did not belong on the top of a mountain. On April 2, 2015, I felt the most trauma I had ever felt in my life. As a victim of domestic violence, nothing could have prepared me for what I would feel that day. Armed men surrounded me while I was in Pule, in a place that for my entire life I had so much reverence for and that had given me so much healing. That day, it turned into a place of hurt, pain, and fear. Feelings that I had been so familiar with, feelings that my daughter had been so familiar with, had returned. My daughter, who was 11 years old at that time, watched as her mother, father, the midwife who helped bring her into this world, aunties, uncles, who she loves and adored, were handcuffed and criminalized for praying and chanting at their highest temple and ancestral homelands. 58 arrests on Mauna Kea in 2015. 7 of those arrests were Native Hawaiian women in a prayer circle. In the middle of the night, mother and daughter, side by side, arrested for being in ceremony. Trauma that was created by your hands. Trauma that they may never heal from in this lifetime. Emergency rules that were later ruled invalid, but the damage had already been done. Your damage had already been done. I am a Native Hawaiian, a mother, a breakfast waitress. I have no legal background and no experience in the legal system. And I am standing here amongst some of the highest paid lawyers in all of Hawaii. Why am I here? Why do I need to be here to convince you to do your job? Taking time away from my family, putting myself through financial difficulties, driving across the opposite side of the island, taking countless days off from work. Why are we here? Will you be voting according to what the law says? Because the law says that our Native Hawaiian rights have priority. Priority to protect and preserve the land. Act like trustees and serve your beneficiaries. uphold your duty of loyalty to the Native Hawaiian beneficiaries and ensure me that my constitutional rights are being protected. Because as far as I'm concerned, this case has already been decided behind closed doors. I went through 10 months of pre-hearing conferences and hearings, surrounded again by the very DLNR officers that arrested us on the mountain for being in ceremony, for being in pule. I put myself through grave financial burden to represent myself and thousands of others who are here or who cannot be here to support my position against this project. All while our community said that this case had already been decided. I stood before a judge and expressed the injury I'm suffering and will suffer should this project proceed. And that injury is not just confined to me, but to my daughter. And I stand here today before you while our community says that this is a losing battle. But yet I'm still here. I'm still here because I do not have a choice. I have a kuleana to my mountain, to my kupuna, and to my daughter. Do you believe that I enjoy being mistreated in a system that was not meant for me to be successful in? Do you believe that I enjoy having to fight my way through systematic racism? Do you believe I enjoy having to justify my cultural practices to foreigners with no cultural practices of their own? Do you believe I enjoy being criminalized for protecting my ancestral homelands? Do you believe I enjoy watching my daughter suffer an irreparable injury due to this permitting process and the anticipated injury should this project continue? Why is this so hard for you? To protect and conserve, uphold the 8 criteria. The TMT project cannot meet the 8 criteria. You either meet it or you do not. There are no exceptions, no exemptions. It does not say all criteria must be met unless you support through financial contributions to the community in the name of education. Or unless you furnish the facilities with pictures of the landscape to provide a sense of place. Or unless you implement a ride-sharing program to reduce the project's noise and dust. The TMT project will never meet the 8 criteria. Based on the hearings, hundreds of hours of testimony presented in the contested case hearings, the applicant cannot meet the 8 criteria because it has failed to account of the injuries that have and will occur should the TMT proceed. No evidence provided thus far have accounted for these injuries. Myself, my daughter, and hundreds of others like me have suffered injuries already due to the current state of Mauna Kea, the arrest, and the potential construction of the TMT. I know what brought me here today, but what I do not know is what brought you here today. You are appointed these positions. You are not elected. So what is it that spoke to you to sit in these positions that you sit in today? What is it that allowed you to accept these appointed positions? Was it to protect the lands? Was it to protect the waters? Was it to protect our endangered species? Was it to protect our native plants? Was it to protect our fragile and unique ecosystems? Was it to serve the best interests of our people? Or was it to protect foreign interests and to serve the best interests of billion-dollar corporations trying to destroy every single one of those things? You did not do your job. 58 people were arrested while you stood by, watched, and created unlawful rules to injure them even further, criminalizing prayer and spirituality, and hundreds more will follow if you allow this project to proceed. You will be sending the message out, not just to Hawaii, but to the world, to every indigenous nation, that Native Hawaiians are less than, that indigenous people are less than, that money is more precious than the land and precious natural resources that you vowed to protect. This case reaches every corner of this earth, and hundreds of thousands of Native people are watching your every move. I am here today because I would die for that mountain. I would die for Aloha Aina. I would die knowing that my daughter would rise up and take my place. And if you think you've seen anything with us, you will see a force that you've never seen before with our keiki. She was raised in ceremony. She was raised with our language spoken to her every day. She was raised with no fear. She was born for this. Please. And if I do not shut this down, she will.
Thank you.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. That was Mehana Kihoi speaking before the Board of Land and Natural Resources regarding the 30-meter telescope permitting process. Very powerful testimony.
Chicken skin.
Yeah. Hours of this, actually, this kind of thing. There's so many good pieces. And later on in this particular piece, you know, the person asks, hey, why do you think this is already done in the background? And that particular board member said, I haven't made up my mind. And she pointed out to him that there are members, key members on that board, who already during the testimonies, during that day's hearings, were asking for financial support for the very people who are fighting them. And then that board member basically said, okay, I understand and I acknowledge. And you know, this type of tension is routine. I'm going to play another piece here from, just a short piece from Kaho'okahi Kanuha. And this is just about a minute of a 16-minute really powerful testimony. But he's got really great. So many people here have wonderful things to say.
I'm going to finish off with this quote from Nelson Mandela. And when a man is denied the right to live the life he believes in, he has no choice but to become an outlaw. An oyaka'u. Aya iko oko ho'oholo ana. Ina ho'oholo oko e ho'opawi keia. Mahalo nui. Ina ho'oholo oko e ho'oholo mua I keia. Then, I'll say what I've said before. For TMT, the university, and the BLNR, it's the wrong place, wrong time, wrong people. We'll see you on the mountain.
Powerful. You know, they're saying, it doesn't matter what you're going to come up with, we are not going to give up this fight. And the Board of Land and Natural Resources, that, you know, they have three more meetings this fall, and I believe for Kauai, one big issue is the redirection of water.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important that people speak up, make it happen, that the needs here are addressed, because if not, they make that decision, and then it's kind of like gold. It goes, and then they can redirect that water. And so the tough thing is they just had the meeting here on Kauai, and then the next they move around, so the next three meetings are not here. But Board of Land and Natural Resources.
Okay.
And they will be looking at our water redirection. And so when people are appointed for these positions, they are gnarly positions to get, you know, and most of them that are appointed to those positions have a vested interest in the shared use of that land and not to leave it in the natural place.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, you can ask me that question just when we're done, because
sure,
I want to
say.
Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man and Edible Hawaiian Islands.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So that was just a small sampling, a very powerful testimony of what was happening at the Board of Land and Natural Resources meeting on Hawaii Island. It was Hilo. So that day, that pretty much had one item on the agenda, which was the 30-meter telescope permitting process. And, you know, they move it around. They, like, the last meeting was here, and we were talking about largely the water at you know,
right.
Wailua.
And you said those positions are gnarly. Is that in the sense that you're going to upset somebody no matter what you do?
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
I mean, they're, and I think that what was so important in what Mehana said is when she's breaking down what those positions are supposed to be protecting the land and the resources and the people, these are very important lands that the Department of Land and Natural Resources is supposed to protect in conservation. And we had something called the Public Land Development Corporation. 5 years ago today was the anniversary of when our county council made a step to do a resolution asking to repeal that. It was a big deal because they had quietly, without any kind of public announcement, redirected the management to be to exploit for revenue. And they're very different from conserving and protecting to exploit for revenue. And that's really the tension in society. You know, how do we make money? And we're all on this treadmill where there's supposed to be money made. And when we look at something like the general plan update, they're under that same big point of tension. Like, how do we put new roads in? We were just talking about, do you move the landfill away from the water's edge where it's at in Ke Kaha right now? And even if that stuff comes over, it's still going to eat away that landfill that was there. It's just and now a mountain. Decisions were made in the past. And, like, for example, when the earlier versions of the general plan update were written, climate change was not seen as such an imminent problem, and now it is becoming really very evident. And while I can go with it that there might be multiple reasons for the climate change, certainly among those reasons is human impacts that are manageable. So whether it's, you know, the sun is having a problem or where our galactic position is, or even, you know, the geoengineering efforts that are out there, whether it's to fix the problem or to change the problem, those things are out there. And when people want to deny it, that is willful ignorance. It's the same kind of shaming that goes out when people are saying, should we be manipulating the weather? And they pretend like no weather manipulation is happening. It just takes the most minimal amount of research. And yes, in fact, it is happening. Whether it's malicious in intention, it's hard to understand why they would want to do a malicious intention, but it is happening. How much does that impact what's going on? How much of it is whatever it is? But whatever it is, it's happening.
Yeah, it's happening, exactly. So there's the whole realm of trying to identify why climate change is happening and address those causative effects or causes. And then there's mitigation of what's actually happening. You know, we can really leave that aside for the moment or treat it as a different issue and look at what's happening, what do we know is going to happen based on these, based on what's happening now, what are the projections on what is going to happen and, you know, what's soon enough in the future that it's fairly sure, unless there's a dramatic change in the trajectory of these things, we can start to look and say, hey, we're going to get bigger and bigger storms along the coastline. We're going to have more erosion going on. We're going to have all those sorts of things. So we can look at mitigating that without knowing why it's happening.
And so when we were just speaking about the need to do that, and that, you know, that would be something that would go in the general plan. That would be what goes on in the planning whole segment. And how do we pay for it? Even just the little things like putting hurricane hooks on my old house, how do we pay for it? You know, what do we do and how do we do it? And so that goes down to the taxation. And when I'm saying, you know, what is usually supported is things that are exploitative in nature. And is that all because people are evil, or is it because somehow, some way, something has to get paid for? And that is where we find this big point of tension. And how do we change our zoning and our plans and even what we hope to have in terms of housing, how we build houses, what we need is formalized housing. Can we have community development housing? How can we change them? And so a week from tomorrow, tomorrow is a county council meeting, but it is what's called a committee meeting. The following Wednesday, which is October 4th at 8:30, they are going to have it in the War Memorial Convention Hall. And so we're going to have a different location. And the whole thing, that whole scheduled day, is just for them to be able to listen to the people. A couple weeks ago, it was overflow crowd when they first heard it for the first time, not enough room for everybody, and they want to be, you know, being able to hear everybody. I spoke with Mason Chalk earlier today. Now, there's some flexibility in what they're working on, but he wanted to share with the listeners the general way that they are going to be working on this general plan, to be doing it justice. And so tomorrow is a listening day. I will speak to what I think might be a good way to be presenting, and I bounced that off of him, so we'll look at that. But it will probably be easily until February that the general plan is going to be looked at. And I happen to have the plan up in front of me, and looking at the table of contents, there are a number of different sectors. And the way they will be working with it, they meaning the county council, the way they will be working with the general plan update is on Wednesdays, which is their normal committee meetings. Mason is the head of the planning committee. They will take the first half of the day and they will be listening to the planning department explaining why they saw what they were doing as the best route of happening, and the council will be speaking back and forth with them. So it's going to be half of the day. Then the second half of the day, they're going to be doing their normal business. The following Thursday after that Wednesday, so it's going to be every other Thursday, they're going to be doing listening to people by sectors of the plan. So if it's the economy, if it's agriculture, the visitor industry, social equity, what they're calling historic resources, I think that's an area that needs to be amplified. That's meaning interests of Hawaii, the Hawaiian culture. It'll be happening. That's going to demand at least 12 weeks of discussion. So at a best case, they'll be figuring this out by February. But it is so important to be involved. And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox, and Jake's in the booth as well. We're working on this. So that is, at present, how they are envisioning being able to handle this. The county council did not write the plan. The planning department wrote the plan, and did it with some contractors who are good at this. You know, they had consultants come in and help. And one of the things they did is they looked at the last plan and the plan before, and, you know, it's important that it doesn't make a zigzag. And they're looking at, okay, are people largely in agreement with what it said before, and how do we adapt it? And so the last time and the time before, for example, there was not an emphasis on needing to retain beach and mountain access. Last time it was just after the hurricane when it really started getting worked on. When it was worked on in like the 70s, beach and mountain access wasn't an issue. So that has to be put in much harder. Climate change was less of an issue. So there are things that are needing to be changed. What I feel are suggestions. I go to meetings all the time. So, and I did bounce this off of Mason and Mel and some former councilmen that are friends of mine. And it is you know, really a lot to take in when you're the council people, listening to people's opinions on it and their perspectives, and it's valued. I really want to say, very importantly, don't come in there with anger, mm-hmm. because it is not their fault. And it's really, you know, no one's fault, the basic problems that the county has. I shouldn't say no one's fault, but it's not their specific piece. So I think when we come in there with an intention to really work on this, that's the best way. Then what I think is important, and I've been suggesting to some different groups, is to cluster topics. Like one topic that I've been working on with some people that just really isn't even in the general plan is the incarceration rates and the adjudication. And there are so many people in our community that are experiencing the failure of their own lives and the community policies to work together. I think that that's a fair way of saying it. There's all kinds of things that don't work, and so people will end up adjudicated. And sometimes they're in court multiple times for seemingly, you know, pretty small issues, and then sometimes people don't even go to court for what seems like really big issues. So I think at least, I'm just giving that as an example.
So there's ways that can be addressed in the general plan. Like, how would you suggest
that? Yeah, like, I think that that's important for I see that as belonging in the social equity segment.
Right.
And if they were, you know, so when we're presenting it to the council people, if people that have a similar interest work together on it. So if, say, 5 or 6 or 10 people decide that they are going to testify on it, it's better if 5 or 6 or 10 people don't say basically the same thing over and over again, because it takes a lot of time.
Right.
It's better to say, I'm in agreement with what Marshall just said, and then you add on to it. And if you work together before going to the council, maybe you're worried about infrastructure relative to climate change, like the meeting that's happening today from 6 to 7:30 at Ha Cafe from the Apollo Kauai and the Women's Caucus. That's like a good place where people can come and really talk about it, and then they might decide, all right, well, here are 5 really key pieces. Why don't person A do an overview, and then the next person talk about beach accretion, or, you know, building in the wetlands, or what we're going to do with our landfill relative to that. You know, if people are able to bring it together and organize it to some degree, it's really super helpful for the guys listening, and it's meaningful. And girl, there's one girl in there, so when I say guys and girl, woman, that they can be getting educated from the people. And I find when there is a planned process, like somebody will do an overview and encapsulate that there's a challenge with, I'm going to make up another one, contamination in the well water. There is definitely a number of areas where there is contaminants in the well water, especially if you do modern tests on it that are looking at parts per billion or parts per trillion as opposed to parts per million. You can see when we have these chemicals in there. So if people are going to be talking about well water, somebody can give an overview, somebody else could give a detail, somebody else could give a specific example of how that's problematic. Somebody else can be looking up where another community has successfully addressed that and how. So we're basically helping the council people do their job. And it takes all of us to be able to be looking at it. And statistics are important to bring in there. It might be that one person can be able to be looking at, you know, how the incarceration rate has gone up so much without the related crime numbers actually going up. Why do we have more people adjudicated without having more criminals? Or maybe we do have more criminals. I'm just making that up. But it is, I have seen a number of details on that. Or another issue that I'm pretty focused on is the displacement of Hawaiian cultural practitioners and people who live close to the land in a way that really does help define what is Hawaii and what was the strength of Hawaii for more than a millennium, and why this culture was able to not only survive but thrive here independently as the most isolated place on the planet. So that's something, that's a real gift and a cultural treasure that we need to keep perpetuating. So, clustering topics, propose solutions, be specific. And as I say, understand that the council is not the drafters, and not that we even need to trash the drafters, because they tried hard. It's not an easy job. And, you know, there's a lot of writing, like in the areas where they really worked on it. There are a lot of graphs and dialogue and things, so it's an overwhelming amount of information. And there's some real good work in there, but there are definitely missing areas. And it, you know, it affects everybody. I'm going to torture Jake for a second here. Jake, pull the mic up near you. This is probably a topic you haven't followed too much. Is that correct? You're going to be the everyman for a moment. Have you watched it too much?
No, I have not.
A little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit. Probably because you're my next door neighbor and I'm sitting there focused on it. Do you understand why it matters to have a well-defined general plan? Do you, I mean, I'm just asking. I'm not torturing
yeah,
you, really.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, because if you don't, I can answer it. But I'm wanting to hear what.
I got an idea of it. I'm not familiar enough on the whole subject to have an educated answer. But I think it's pretty apparent that if you don't have a plan, then you don't really know where you're going. And for somewhere like a community, that's a pretty big issue.
And the end result of it is it's like how people get pushed off the island. You were born and raised here, correct?
Yes.
And you're in your 30s?
Yes.
So in those 30-something years, we have replaced a whole lot of our population.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just the development alone and the traffic. I mean, when I was younger, there really wasn't much traffic.
There wasn't much traffic. There are more people is one of the reasons, but another reason is we, you know, have centralized a lot of development, and more people are choosing to drive to chase the surf or drive wherever they're going. We get in the car a lot more, and there's more cars per family. You know, so that's a part of it. But when we are, what comes out of the general plan is we make what's called comprehensive zoning ordinances. So that says you can only have a house that's, you know, 18 feet off the ground if you live in Hyena, and you have to have an elevator. I don't know that you really do have to have an elevator, but a lot of them have elevators out there now. You know, how you it helps to define the building codes. It helps to define who can have a house where, what can happen, where a house can't be. You know, there's a lot of elements like that, so it can effectively price people off the island. And if you were to say, well, let's build a whole lot more houses so people can afford to have a home, well, then all of a sudden the island's really crowded. And so it's a supply and demand element. And so if we're not careful, do we not have open spaces and we fill it everywhere with small farms? Do we, you know, it's these questions that are very important. And how do we pay for it? And how are we going, you know, to allow, like our population replacements, as we build all these new roads or we build all these new things, it basically finances people right off the island, the money. And at your age level, probably a lot of your friends have moved away. Is that correct?
Yeah, a good majority of my friends have moved away. It's definitely a lot easier to move out of state and to be making the same wages that you would be making over here and to realistically be able to afford a home. Whereas over here, that's not even a possibility a lot of the cases.
Yeah, it's a big issue. And if people would like to call in, it's 826-7771. So those are, and you can call in about anything else, too, because it doesn't have to be about the general plan update, though, because I've got a one-track mind right now, it's pretty easy for me to find almost almost any issue that is on Kauai actually feathers into that. I believe that we have a caller, so we are happy to take them. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia Marshall and Jake with Kauai Soapbox. And we have a caller. Maybe it didn't work. Okay, so, yeah, 826-7771. And many, many issues are going on right here. And one big one is the water. That's another one that we will be bringing up more and more. We have to figure out how we can make sure to have clean water. And again, those are things that have happened, you know, quite a long time ago, a lot of the things that are poisoning it. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Felicia?
Yes.
Hi, this is Joan.
Hey,
sorry,
Joan.
I didn't see the first hour.
Yes, I thought you were coming in. No?
No, I remember I said I had a... Anyway,
okay,
I'm
okay.
Here.
Okay, okay, yes,
I'm here.
Hi.
Okay, so... I've been listening for the since five, and I think that you're right as far as people needing to, or people getting involved on our community. And it would be nice that we have more people speaking out and just in a nice way to find their voices. You said on any subject, so I'll just go real briefly. That the reason I'm calling in is because last week HPR had a report about the Korean.
Yes, Hawaii Public Radio.
That's correct.
Talking about the nuclear threat from North Korea, and I do now remember that you told me you weren't coming in. So. We did talk about that, and so I will just quickly sum that up.
Okay.
Yeah, we spent about, it's okay, about probably 35 minutes, but you're not the only one who's just tuning in now. And so what I did share was that I had a number of phone calls, and one of the most robust of which was with the former commander, Captain Bruce Hay, from Pacific Missile Range Facility, and that... You know, he was helping me to understand. It really helped me to feel a whole lot better how the Navy particularly has a lot of capacity to be able to shoot just about anything down that North Korea could shoot at us, that our technology is far superior to theirs, and that we are vigilant and watching for it, and that... you know, you can never say anything with 100% confidence, but there is a lot of confidence that anything that they might throw in our direction, that we would be able to take that down and out of the sky. And that if they did make a choice like that, that what the North Korean government understands very fully is that there are a number of ballistic missiles, I believe that's the right word, ballistic, non-nuclear weaponry, a number of them all... targeted and trained on their key infrastructure of what works for their government, and they would not have to have a nuclear bomb sent in response. They would not need to kill millions of North Koreans. They could do strategic targeting, and there would most probably be certainly collateral damage, and innocent people would be killed, but it would be... He didn't give me numbers on that, but meaning like, you know, hundreds of people might die in the process of neutralizing that regime, and it does not need to be a nuclear strike on them, which would then, of course, be highly inflammatory to their neighbors and certainly horrific for the North Koreans themselves. So he was very comfortable and easy to be able to share that... it seemed like the media was really fanning this hype, and as the former commander of the base, he felt really confident that not only would we be safe, but so would Guam, so would be the rest of the American protectorate in the Pacific. And so his commentary was very reassuring, and I felt that he was coming from the most sincere, you know, place in saying it.
Okay.
And I know you have a lot of concern about complacency towards the nuclear threat. Is that correct?
Well, just in general with everything, and I guess it's just time in regards to all of us taking a little bit more action. So I understand what you're saying to me wasn't really my concern from the military.
All right.
What it was is just the contamination, like my concern about environmental pollution and nuclear contamination. That's my concern.
So like Fukushima, for example. Fukushima would be an example?
Well, and the fact that it's becoming more of an issue now in regards to nuclear arms, that's all. That's where my focus is just the idea of nuclear waste, you know, anywhere, and the continuance of it. And also in regards to the general plan, I think all your points with your discussion with Mason is right on. We don't need to go in and target anyone. This is more suggestions would be helpful. So the community, and that's one way of getting ideas and information and suggestions is what I think that your meetings, the general plan meetings are about. How can the county help if they just heard from the community? So I know that yes, what you just said is important, that we all get involved. It's time. There's no waiting anymore. Our opinions need to be heard. And somehow also a lot of thought before we get to a public arena because of the time. It'd be nice to be more concise.
Right. And then if any of us have suggestions, or if there's a cluster of people and somebody can be testifying where there's a community that has creatively resolved an issue that we have a focus on, you know, any way we can help them. We should go there with the spirit of helping, not condemning. And I think
we could go with a
spirit of gratitude for the work that has been done, and a spirit of enthusiasm that there is very potentially a citizen committee that is willing to do some of this hard work to help with the support of that. So thank you so much for calling in. Do you have a contact number or anything that you would like to share at this point, if there was other people who shared your interest in
they can call my home.
Okay.
And the number is 332-8149-8149. And if people would like to just gather and talk about things in our community, it'd be great. Only because I think people need to vent, and if we could do it, you know, kindly, then I think it'll be faster as far as getting our points across.
Okay, and Jane Heller, you live in Kalahale?
No, Joan.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I said Jane. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Joan.
It's okay.
I know that.
I'm in Lawai.
Lawai.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I know that.
Joan, I'm sorry. Embarrassed. Okay. Yeah, I know that.
I appreciate your efforts, Tamisha. So. That's about it.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you. And Joan, I look forward to hearing from you more, and you know, we can help with you know, if you need to have a council person even, or somebody help with your group. Like if you get a group together, you might find somebody who would be very interested in supporting what perspective you're having, because if you get, like, Errol lives near you. Errol Conishero lives near you. So maybe Errol would be somebody. I'm giving him a call out right on the air. Errol, maybe you want to help.
Anyone, right. Anyone from any sector. We all need to get together and get to know each other more about our, and be involved in our community. Yes. Okay.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Joan.
Felicia.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Aloha. Bye-bye. Thank you for holding. You're on the air. This is KKCR.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something. The problem is, you know, we got all these rich people buying these homes, and they don't even live in these homes, and they're driving their Hawaiians out of their homes, and the tax is up. There needs to be rules where they have to take care of things, because they have to be responsible, because basically, there's people like Pure Kauai saying, come, buy this house. It hasn't sold for 5 years. Buy it for, you know, $3 million cheaper than the $10 million, and we'll make sure you can vacation rental it. And you only need to come, you know, 2 months out of the year since you have billions of dollars, and we'll take care of it all for you. And you can, we have many more houses to sell. We want to drive the taxes. This Pure Kauai thing, these Pure Kauai people and all these other people that think they can just turn this island into a lawyer program of money making is ridiculous. They need to be shut down. We need to have rules where they need to tell the rich people, well, you do need to contribute to your economy, and you will not be able to buy this vacation rental and rent it and just do everything you want and then just make money off the property and come visit. You will have to pay money to the community. You will have to pay money. There should be a program for the locals that got kicked out of their homes that the taxes did raise, because this is an evident thing that everyone knows about. So they should be given money from the people that own these homes. Jake, he's a great guy. He's a great person. He's a great worker. And he worked with me before. He don't like me anymore or something, but he worked with me before at some of these houses.
He just left. He's like, no.
Oh, well, he's a great guy, okay?
He works
on houses and people, and realizes that all of a sudden these people are going to run everything and just take the island, and then there's going to be more and more of them and less us.
Well, can I
and
give
that's
you
the
a
way
few,
it works.
I want to give you a few little pieces of feedback, too.
Yeah, sorry. That's all I have to say.
No.
There's these things going on that they're offering and marketing houses.
Well,
and
what?
They're not telling the people the information like, well, when you buy this house, you know, they're going to, it will raise the taxes for the Hawaiians that live around the corner. They don't say that, so they just sell it, and they just say they're going to make a bunch of money. And it's just, and I could be risking my job just in this going. I don't care. I feel that this is an evident thing. You know, Pure Kauai is bad. They want to tell people false information, sell them the house, and say you can just rent vacation rental and all this stuff. When actually, you know, there's communities around there.
Well, have you
raising
seen
the taxes and
have you seen?
And
this,
I'm a part of it, so I don't know what to do.
Have you seen this thing right now? There's an ad sponsored on Facebook called Renovate to Rent. And they say,
yeah.
How are these Greater Lihue areas homes? So this is some
yeah,
company.
Yeah, I saw
from
the lady and her Lexus driving up there, and they're getting all that ready to go, and they diverted all the water for that.
Renovate to Rent. This one was very troubling for me because it's all about how to flip. And
yeah,
so
no,
I have.
I'm renting for hire. I just had a friend that rented for me for $2,500. I got lucky. This one would go for $3,500 that I'm renting for $25. He just is a friend.
Right, and then
you know,
that's
it's
a lot.
It's crazy. Yeah, so the rent is up. Everything's up. Everything's crazy. But they have people like me that can hand weed, do stuff, and help clients that are like, and then you help, and then you make their house all nice, and then, you know, then I can afford to live here. That's the only way I afford to live here.
Right, so that's what we talked about, that when people
so,
are
you know,
in a role
and I feel
of
bad, you know.
Exploiting.
You know, like, and then, you know, Jake just got mad when I paid him. His money was in the dirt. He's like, you put my money in the dirt. I was like, oh, come on, man.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right.
But,
okay.
You know what?
Thank
I just
you.
Want to say, you know, good job. Keep up the good work. There has to be rules made for the people that move here and buy houses that are driving up the taxes and all this stuff.
And those people do pay substantially more taxes. They pay like 8 times as much.
And we need a sacred wildlife law, right? Save no more too much building, because we don't want to give everybody, you know, all these nice places to rent, you know, for $5,000 a month. We want to make it to where it's hard to live here. I think, you know what, I don't know anymore. I don't know.
Okay.
I just think that people that have a higher salary and buy this house, they have to take establishment responsibility. They can't just enjoy the cake and eat it too.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks, Felicia. I just wanted to confirm that, I mean, we are in a huge housing crisis over here for local working, hardworking people. I mean, I went through it. It's unbelievable.
And what side of the island do you live on? What side do you live on?
I live North Shore.
Okay.
And it's just, I think whatever happens, that there's got to be a balance between the rich and the poor, you know. I mean, if people are buying big estates and they can't, under the TMK or whatever, do another house for somebody.
Yeah, and so
They need to change the zoning stuff or something, because there is a serious housing shortage here.
There is, and that's definitely something that, you know, I mean, the general plan update does actually say, yes, there's a serious housing shortage, but it is very difficult to know how do we increase it on the same terms that we're using. So thank you so much for calling
in.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay.
Aloha. I did want to give a shout out to WIPA Foundation for something they've got coming up.
Oh, what's up?
Well, let's hear.
On Saturday, September 30th, Kona Brewing Company presents Makana Waipa, Eat the Invasives, a benefit to celebrate the bounty of Waipa and help inspire folks to Malama Aina. Chefs Mark Oyama, Gavin Onishi, Mark Noguchi, Lee Ann Wong, Adam Watton, and Jason Sessions will create tantalizing dishes with locally sourced ingredients, each featuring an invasive species. Music by the Waipa Serenaders and Keale. A beautiful evening of food, drink, and aloha, supporting the Waipa Foundation. Tickets and more info at makanawaipa.eventbrite.com.
Isn't that great? Eat the invasives. I mean, that's definitely a win-win, finding a way to create food and learn a new habit. And so Eat the Invasives at Waipa. Jazz with John is coming up at the top of the hour.
Did they say sponsored by the Kauai Brewing Company?
Yeah.
Nice. Way to go.
Yep, way to go. So thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening just for the last 15 minutes or so. And
thank you.
Something that I've been thinking about, I heard something to the effect of in Japan, where there's a very popular tourist area, there is a transient impact tax versus like what we have, the TAT, the transient accommodation tax. There's so much emphasis on accommodation, and I think we really need to emphasize the impact that tourism is having. And I know that we've, of course, talked about, you know, what is happening to our reefs, what's happening with the overwhelmed septic in Hanalei, and really, I mean, it's completely unacceptable. And then we also look at the quality of our outdoor adventure. I mean, people come here for all kinds of wonderful outdoor enjoyment, and people are getting ticketed out the wazoo over at the end of the road, and where do those dollars go? So I'm wondering, how can we funnel more of the funds that are coming in at a breakneck pace, desperately impacting our island, and yet it doesn't seem like we're mitigating the impact with what we're, how, I don't know who we, the infamous we, are benefiting.
Well, so I have a few thoughts on that, and I'm going to drag Marshall into this conversation in a moment here, too. Definitely, that issue is a piece that is worthy of this October 4th General Plan Update meeting. The visitor numbers and the visitor impact is really critical. Like, if you... you brought up a suggestion of what was working in Japan. Now, when we have this transit accommodation tax, one challenge that we're finding is that the state still wants to, you know, keep taking more and more of it and not give it out to the outer islands. So if we had a visitor impact or a transit impact tax, it's still only as good as you can keep it, right? You know, like if Oahu takes it, to continue doing something like build the rail or, you know, whatever else that they might have as a strong need that they feel like is a need for what I will call the state. But that's a good example. And, you know, how do we hold our numbers at a level where it's not overwhelming us? So you're right. And, you know, there is a lot of meetings and efforts that are going on about the visitor industry. Where do you live?
I'm actually just moving to the North Shore back from the east side.
Okay, well, the Hanalei Haena Community Association is doing a really excellent job looking at those visitor industries. Now, I want to bring Marshall into this for a second.
Well, I just have to make a correction to begin with, Felicia. That's Kona Brewing Company that's sponsoring the WIPA Eat the Invasives.
Kona Brewing Company. Thank you.
Sure.
And Marshall, like you just had family come over, and so you were a tourist for a couple of weeks pretty recently.
Boy, was I, 14 days straight.
So did you have fun? Did you?
Wow, this is an amazing place to visit. Yeah, sure. I know why people come here. Unbelievable. We had an awesome time. But it's very clear to me, playing tourist, and to my family who were tourists, that there are too many tourists here. It's so clear. Even the tourists know this is ridiculous.
Right. I mean, come on. 2 hours, you know, you're going to spend an hour trying to get out of Honolulu. I mean, it's not quality of life.
It's usually 35, 40 minutes, but, when it's stuck, but it can feel like an hour. I mean, have you really been stuck an hour? It can be. I don't know.
Well, okay, maybe 40 minutes, but
yeah.
Really, truly.
To go 3 miles,
yeah. Think about the fossil fuel consuming.
Yeah.
So, I mean, anything from, like, okay, can we redirect those dollars to, like, hey, how about public transportation? I bet you a lot of people would be happy to just take their boogie board and their beach bag and their kids and just cruise down from Princeville. I mean, what I'm feeling in the last 10 years of living here is that I'm looking and I'm very eager to find that cohesiveness with our community members where we can get off the soapbox and we can really actually make changes. And so I guess I'm just really hungry to know how.
Well, get involved, and there are Facebook sites and all kinds of things that are working on this topic, and we need to work together. And certainly if you talk to the Honolulu Hyena Community Association, it's a great place to get involved with being able to help the general plan update. So I thank you so much for calling in. I know I have another caller holding, and we're almost at the end of the show. So
thanks for all that you do.
Okay.
Aloha.
You know, Felicia, it was very interesting to be that tourist for 2 weeks and to go around with them and live that life. Interesting things to discover on what that experience is like for people that are visiting here. And what you know, I mean, for one thing, I don't eat out, really, you know, and in terms of, like, stopping by and getting takeout during the day or something like that, I just don't do it. But we did a lot of that, and I was shocked. I was like, oh, my goodness, so much of what's served out of little places, food trucks, whatever else, comes packaged. Even if you're going to sit down at the picnic table 5 feet away, you've got a whole lot of packaging. And a lot of times for the recyclable containers, the soda cans, the water cans, whatever else, there's not even a place to recycle that. You know,
right.
I was at places where I said, where can I recycle this? They just handed me out of the window. And they're like, oh, you know, there's not.
Right. There's not that commitment. Yeah. It takes a lot to have that happen. I know, my son, who just went back to school on the continent in Oregon, he, born and raised here, but he went on a helicopter ride for the first time just before he left, and he did the zip line. And he was really amazed and inspired. You know, it's like, he was all excited. So that was a big issue. Now, I think I have my caller back on. Let's take it right on. Aloha. Thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Felicia?
Yes.
Marshall?
Hi.
Oh, hi. Yes, this is Andy. So
yeah, hi,
Andy.
Oh,
hi, Andy.
Hi. Anyways, you know, I read an article, an excellent article in the Advertiser a couple weeks ago about the city of Utrecht in the Netherlands. They had just constructed a modern, state-of-the-art 6,000 bicycle parking garage. And the article took like half a page of a full page. And the benefits that they're evolving away from the car to the bicycle. Copenhagen, 60% of the commuters commute into Copenhagen from the suburbs on a network of bicycle freeways.
Wow.
And I've actually written and collected a bunch of supporting documents, I'm going to present to you folks a presentation on how and why we need to evolve out of the automobile and to a system of bicycles and shuttles. And, for example, for the tourists going to the North Shore, instead of people driving to Blackpot Beach from Hanalei, why not walk? Or there could be a bicycle garage, parking garage, where tourists can rent a bike and ride down there. I rode my bike around Hanalei a couple weeks ago, and I was at Blackpot, and there was like five cars pulling in. They didn't know where to go, and the place was filled with cars. See, we're choking not only in exhaust, but from like automobiles. And this island is so set up to revert to automobiles. There could be a bicycle freeway going all around the island, you know. Anyways, but so, I will drop that off when I'm done.
Okay, and I think that like a good place to actually bring that again is October 4th to the county council meeting when they're really listening to people, and you can make, they will Xerox it for you and give it to the different council members, but if you come in and you are able to say, especially when it's in that time when they're talking about either visitor numbers or transportation, mm-hmm. and say, I have looked and here are different places where it has worked well. And Joanne Yukimura is the council person who is the most focused on multimodal transportation.
Okay.
And well, she's a really strong ally, and she is on a panel today at Ha Cafe, starting at 6 to 7:30. We'll probably end up going till something like 8:30. That's just my guess. About climate change, general plan update, and then it will definitely, I'm sure, deal with the transportation issues because that bike path and all that is going to be impacted by the low-lying roads. So thank you so much, Andy.
Yeah, are you going to that meeting?
Well, I'm in KKCR in Princeton.
Yeah, but you're not going to make it. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All righty. Well, yes, well, thank you for listening. And I really sincerely believe that we have to make a paradigm shift. The automobile, auto-centric reality is the hugest blunder, you know, our civilization has made. But thank you for all that you folks do. Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha, Andy. Thank you.
Bye.
Now, there's definitely some reality in that. And, you know, sometimes I look and I go, oh, my gosh, what a bubble of life to have been born into. You know, even the poorest among us can live so well. You know, we can throw our clothes in the washing machine, maybe. I guess maybe not. But, I mean, kings and queens of old couldn't hop on a plane and go someplace. They didn't have clean clothes so easily there for them that, you know, they didn't have a bunch of servants who would probably let just as well see them dead for making sure that they had to create and clean their clothes. You know, we have so much abundance and ability while we live in this narrow age of oil.
This narrow age of, yeah. This,
we're like so blessed.
We're so blessed, but I mean, really, in the big scheme of things, I guess you could look at it as a narrow age of unsustainability.
Yeah.
Right? We live right in this, sure, it's fun, it's great, yeah, we got everything we need, but it's not that big a long a time, and if we don't do something, we're going to hit the outer limit of that age
right.
of unsustainability.
And there are people on this planet that are young that are going to really have to heavily deal with that mess.
Right.
I like there's an Arabic saying that says, my grandfather rode a camel. My, you know, dad drove a car. My son drives a plane, flies a plane, and his grandchild will ride a camel.
Hmm.
You know, it's like, okay, this little blurb, and we're leaving a really rough legacy if we don't resolve it. And I think most of us, even breathing, are going to start running into some of that. And lifting prayers for all the people on this planet from Bali to Bangladesh to Myanmar, Mexico, Puerto Rico, Houston, the Pacific Northwest and their fires, Mexico and their earthquakes, all over the place. People are, you know, really dealing with a crisis, and we're having a convergence of crises, so it's important that we get prepared. And John Gordon, who's coming up at the top of the hour, he is part of the Ham Radio Club, and he's another part of our community emergency response crew, just
Public service communicator.
Public service communicator. All right, so we're just about out of here. Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Jake's in the house. Any aloha from either one of you gentlemen? As then we're going to go out with the county council report for tomorrow.
Aloha, thank you.
So much aloha, Felicia. Thank you, Jake. Thanks a lot for being in.
All right, and so here is Jazz with John after the county council report.